before the cross or the resurrection, before the creeds or the crusades, before there were Catholics or Protestants or Orthodox, before sacraments and paraments, before Bach's Mass in B minor and Michelangelo's Pietà, before the Vatican, before Old South Church in Boston, before Christianity, there was a child sent from God who made your head turn, who caught the whole world's attention. A child for whom the stars in the sky danced and the angels sang, whose presence summoned both Palestinian peasants and dignitaries from the Orient. A child who touched things deep and high and holy. Matthew and Mark and Luke and John, they all make it their life's great work to write of this child, to build for this child a gospel story, a strong and sturdy craft, a vessel to bear his words and works, his miracles and his parables, a vessel so sturdy as to ferry the words and works, the stories and parables of Jesus down through the centuries, down through the millennia. You see, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, they are smitten by this child, Jesus. They are smitten by Jesus, whose compassion and tenderness are extended to all who are needy. Smitten, they are, by this child of God who reaches out in love and in healing to the despised of his day, to the Samaritan and the leper, to those of low estate, to women, Gentiles, to the enslaved. So smitten are the gospel writers, the evangelists, that they come to believe. They come to believe with a surety with which they are willing to bet their lives that this child is heaven sent, that his tenderness and compassion, that they come from God, that they are of God, that they are God on earth. So smitten and persuaded are Matthew and Mark and Luke and John and Peter and Paul and Timothy and Martha and the Marys. So smitten are they, so persuaded, so grateful to God are they, that they discover themselves part of a movement. They cannot help themselves. It's a small movement, homegrown and straggly, but powerful with passion and conviction and powerful with gratitude. So empowered by the Christ child are they that they dare confront the common cruelties of their day. They stand up to, they face down, they decry the practice of infanticide, common in their day. They stand up to, they face down, they decry the practice of gladiatorial contest, common in their day, big business, let's laugh and cheer at the slaves killing each other to death. So empowered by the Christ child are they that they confront the common cruelties of their day, and in time and over time, their daring and their defiance, they change the course of human history. So smitten and persuaded are they by the tenderness of God's heart that they build services for the poor and the frail, for widows and children, for the ill and the broken. So smitten are they by the Prince of Peace sent by God to earth that they reject conscription to military service, refusing to conform to a way premised on violence. Before Constantine or St. Francis, before the Opus Dei or the Salvation Army, before El Greco's Resurrection or Newton's Amazing Grace, before Desmond Tutu or Dr. King, before Christianity, there was a child, an infant sent from God to soften our hearts, to quicken our pulses, a child in whose shining eyes God is surely reflected, and whose very presence provokes in us both crisis and decision. What crisis? What decision? these. Who will this child be for you? Who will this child sent from God, who will this child be for you? And better yet, and truer still, and more to the point, who will you be for this child? Who will you be for this child sent from God to earth? This child for whom the stars danced and the angels sang and people gave their lives over. Who will you be for this child? Today is Consecration Sunday. If you are a visitor or new to Old South Church in Boston, let me tell you about Consecration Sunday at Old South Church. Today, the members and friends of this church undertake something mysterious and beautiful and difficult and for some downright terrifying. We will let go of our money, some of it, a meaningful portion of it, our own hard-earned money. We will let it go. We will give it over to God. We will pledge it to uses other than our own uses. We will entrust it to the church, and we will dedicate it to ministry and to mission. We will consecrate it. That is, we will bless it. We will hallow it. We will supercharge our money for sacred purposes. So I ask you to take a moment and turn to page 6 in your bulletins. And you see there, Old South Church in Boston, members and friends pledging for 2015. This is what we did together. And it is a beautiful thing to behold. And I'm here to tell you that from that $1 to $999, 98 households, there are in there some widow's mites, people who are giving maybe more than they should. And look there, 87 households giving over $1,000, 56 giving over $2,500. My friends, this is a beautiful thing. This is you giving to God, making ministry happen. 13 households giving over $10,000, 3 over $15,000, 2 over $25,000, and 2 over $40,000. And here's the thing, we can't even thank those people. It's anonymous. So let's thank them now. This is no small thing. This is discipleship dedicated to God and to the service of God's church on earth. This is a beautiful thing. Thank you. This giving of money is a counterintuitive, countercultural, anti-materialist, uncapitalistic undertaking, and I give God thanks for you and for that. So someone, a visitor here, might say, what possibly could prompt such strange behaviors as represented on this sheet of paper? And the answer is that we too are smitten by Jesus. Our hearts are filled with gratitude for this child for whom stars danced and angels sang. This child who is from God and of God and who is God. And in pledging to him, in pledging to his service, our time, our talents, and also our treasure, we are answering the great and inescapable questions of Christianity. Who will this child be for me? And who will I be for this child? With the ice caps and catastrophic meltdown, and the gap between the rich and the secure, and the poor and the insecure, an ever-widening chasm of difference and indifference, who will we be for this one who comes from God? With our unhoused neighbors multiplying out there on the streets and their desperation growing as winter approaches, who will we be for this one who proclaims good news to the poor? As the divides between Jew and Christian and Muslim grow deeper and ever more ominous, with Paris under attack, at the inception of what Pope Francis has termed the Third World War, Who will we be, Old South Church, for this one sent by God who bridges Occident and Orient and who challenges us to pursue peace in his name? As Matthew and Mark and Luke and John built their gospel stories, their ships, to ferry the story of Jesus into the future, so may each of us make of our own lives a vessel for this story of Jesus. And together, all of us, as represented here, but also as represented in all the volunteer work you do, together we make of this church, of Old South Church in Boston, just such a sturdy vessel. For the past 2 days, I was down in New Haven at Yale Divinity School teaching a course entitled Ministry in an Age of Crisis. I was making the case that we have entered an epoch that will increasingly be defined by large catastrophic events, natural disasters, terror, and so forth. My hope, my purpose, was to equip future ministers with some of the tools available to them to minister bravely and tenderly in what is a manifestly terrifying world. My purpose was also to warn them, to say to them, the world is not safe. It is not safe. And to try to bolster them with Christian courage. I am profoundly saddened that in the middle of the class, the devastating attacks on Paris only proved my thesis. But while I was at YDS, Yale Divinity School, I was asked a lot about the marathon bombings, what happened outside this door. And they wanted to know how you reacted. How did Old South Church in Boston react to that terror? They wanted to know if we were tempted to close our famous open door. And I explained that we talked about that. In the wake of the bombings, the church staff, church council, the board of deacons, we talked about it, we prayed about it, we considered security, and we agreed together, no way, no, we're not closing these doors. No, this sanctuary in the city, this house of God, remains open 7 days a week, free to the public. It remains open in defiance of evil. It remains open for prayer, for the homeless to come in from the cold and the wet, for the curious tourist who is trying to comprehend how we can be both Christian and LGBTQ. It remains open in homage to the child sent from God who made your head turn, who caught the whole world's attention, by whom time is divided, a child for whom stars danced and angels sang, a child who gives us the courage to live in his love every day, despite the risks. And I told them about the marathon scarf project. How does Old South Church in Boston respond to bombings? We knit scarves made of love and courage, and we wrap runners in them. That's how Old South Church responds. Smitten by this child, we live in his love in direct defiance of those whose purpose is hate and evil and violence. Will the church please say amen? Before the Mormon Tabernacle Choir or African-American spirituals, before Christmas trees or Easter eggs, before pipe organs or Sunday school, before infant baptism or believer's baptism, before the apostles or the Nicene creeds, before any of this, before all of this, there was a child sent from God who provokes in us and for us both crisis and decision. Who will this child be for you? And who will you be for this child? Who will you be for this child in this world of terror? This morning, as you consider your financial support of the ministries of Old South Church in Boston, may these questions guide and challenge you. And God bless you. And thank you. Amen.